Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. Please, folks, do not forget, when government does something they have no authority to do, when they spend money on things that they do not have the legitimate authority to do, it is fraud. Ergo, for 100 years, over 100 years, going into the mid-1800s, back, you know, when they were forming the Department of Interior, the federal government began spending money, actually even before that, when they started getting involved in the trains. All this money that they spent was unconstitutional. And so when they spent money on objects that they had no constitutional authority to save the children from the plague, as noble and nice as it is, that power is not delegated to them. And so when they did these real noble things and created these noble executive bodies like the Environmental Protection Agency, every single one of them was a violation, and every dollar spent was fraud. That debt is fraud. Anybody that understands and actually, you know, connects the dots will realize that Social Security is a fraudulent game. The one thing that has to be done, because I don't want anybody to think that Social Security needs to be and will be taken away, it needs to be ended and actualized. You need to understand what actualized means. The concept of actualizing is here's something that we created that we actually owe to the people because the people have depended on this big lie that the government created. Therefore, they will honor that one lie, and because it's at the people's expense. Remember, the dignity, the sovereignty of all governments in this constitutional republic come from the people. And when the people have been duped and actually lied to, and they've created this dependency, there's nothing more, I think, tragic and nothing more tyrannical than pulling the rug out from underneath them when they've been lied to. Now, this is a lot different than people that are employees that go and seek a job in the Environmental Protection Agency. They work there 20 years or whatever and retire. You are in a position that is illegitimate. Your retirement is illegitimate. They don't have the funding. So all these people in the federal government that have been participating in unconstitutional government, whose fault is it? Is it the government's avarice and desire to rule us in every faction, in every way they possibly can? Is it their fault? Or is it those people who didn't do the due diligence to go, hey, you know, you really don't have the authority to do this? That doesn't matter. What matters is Social Security was basically introduced, and it needs to be closed out the way it was introduced so that everybody gets, and when I say everybody, those people who legitimately deserve Social Security. Social Security needs to stop paying for disabilities for people that never worked. That it should only be for those who put into it for whatever the parameters were, because the design was never to take care of these people that couldn't work with disabilities. Or children that had disabilities, or illegals that have disabilities. That is not what Social Security was for. That all has to end. It's just people that have disabilities is a different problem altogether. But Social Security was a retirement plan that was promised the people that if you worked and put into this, you would be paid. Going back to that and actually honoring the true system that was designed, you will find that the actualizing won't be that bad, and it actually can be put to rest. And what I mean put to rest, we can slowly pay everybody that's still alive, and we want to make sure that government doesn't start creating death panels and death beds and so forth where, you know, they want to get rid of those people, because that happened in Germany. The first people that were put into the chambers, the gas chambers, were the sick, lame, and lazy. Those people were non-productive. Go look at your history, folks. We have to ensure that these promises are kept. And so Social Security is the one thing, maybe fraud, maybe something they had no authority to do, but they promised the people, and the people lived their lives over almost a century now, just a few more years and we'll cross that century mark, where they induced this Social Security, this slavery to Social Security. So the fraud that we're dealing with is all of these other things, including that. But we can close that and actualize that without hurting America. Because if they actually close that out and they don't honor that system, that would be a devastating blow to the American people because they were promised this. Anyway, so we're going through a lot of documents. We're proving to you the importance of petitions. I'm going to dive into that a little bit later, but the whole point is that if you're following this curriculum that started on January 2nd to today and all the way through the year, we're covering the critical documents that you need to know. And as a matter of fact, what we've been covering over the past couple of weeks on Mondays and Fridays, because Tammy and I are covering the other main critical documents like the Constitutional Convention is what we're doing. And the next thing that we're going to do, Tammy and I, will be the ratification debates. So what we're doing here is we're proving to you from, or what I'm doing on these ancillary days, Mondays and Fridays, I'm proving to you and I'm connecting the dots from the Tory Acts, the petitions, and so forth. And I'm actually going through those who argue against the Constitution, those who are trying to get you to actually surrender your citizenship, join a jural assembly, those types of organizations are misleading you and they're giving you subversive information. The concept of magistrates and the doctrine of lesser magistrates is dead in America. It died when the Constitution was ratified. Because we split the magistrate into three separate branches. And the sovereign branch out of the three was our legislative body because we're a republican form of government, not a monarchical. The power of creating law was not given to the executive. It was given to the legislative. Therefore, our sovereigns and the people that when we have problems with government, we don't go to the court. We're supposed to go to our representatives. And actually, when you really look at the process of how the colonies revolted or slowly started working and petitioning the king and so forth that built up to the revolution, they followed the law. The problem is today, nobody's following the law. Nobody is petitioning the representatives. Oh, we've got lobbyists that are going straight into the representatives, not even creating a consensus of the people. And they are convincing a few people, like the Convention of States, this is the only thing we can do. They're being disingenuous. They're outright lying. And there are other groups out there that are telling you, well, don't go down this path of republic review. Don't do this petitioning and interposition. It's all about nullification. It's all about the oath of office. Folks, it's confusing. This is why we go through all of these documents to prove when it came down to action, when government was violating the Constitution, what Madison and Jefferson didn't do is they didn't call for convention. They didn't nullify those laws. They didn't go to the courts. They didn't, you know, go into a secession mode where they said, you know, we got to get out of this. We got to give up our citizenship. This is the end. It's all over. In less than 10 years, it's all over. Right? Because in 1798, that was the final year of the 10th year to where they were going, you know, starting a whole new decade of this government in 1799. So bottom line, when we really look at what these men did, what the framers did, they followed verbatim this concept of petitioning and interposition that was actually followed by the colonists which was done again and again and done again with Jefferson and Madison. So let me keep move forward, but the point of going through this history and why you need to start going through these documents with us, read through these things. We read them so that you can read along. The documents are on reclaimingtherepublic.org. So this way, as you learn, you can start praying, let him validate what you're reading and verify what we're telling you, or actually not what we're telling you, what the framers have basically spoken from the dust. In these documents, they're literally speaking to us from the dust. So learn, pray, and act. Now, I need to go into this whole point of demanding constitutional compliance because it really kind of envelops into two different points. One point is that you need to start campaigning and driving and awakening the people that if we focus on constitutional compliance, every problem goes away. You don't have to be a part of the JBS. You don't have to be a part of the 10th Amendment Center. You don't have to be a part of any myopic organization. You can be a part of demanding full compliance of the Constitution. You can step back. You can actually step back and say, comply to this completely, instead of just saying, well, please just honor our right to bear arms. All of these groups, all of these myopic groups are divisive. If they're saying, did you have to join us to make the world better? Then that is antithetical to what the framers did. The framers put aside their differences, they put aside their self-interest, and they united on the principles of liberty and compliance to the fundamental laws at that point in time, which was natural law, which drove them and evolved into what we have, the Constitution, in creating a very limited and defined government, that these are the only things they can do. Therefore, if we get government into compliance, that means that they will get out of abortion, they will get out of marriage, they will get out of energy, get out of the environment. That is a state and local issue. Not that they're not important, but that state and local issue. They have a very specific focus of protecting our sovereignty. The states have a responsibility of working together to make sure they're not killing each other. And the federal government does not have the ability to regulate within the states. When it comes to commerce, they're just an umpire. They're only there to basically make sure that the states are playing fairly with each other. That's it. So, as we talk about the DOJ and your campaign, it is all about constitutional compliance. The only legitimate purpose, and it shouldn't be the Department of Justice, it should be the Office of Justice. They should be the ones going around throughout the federal government, removing judges, removing congresspeople, removing anybody that's within the executive community that is functioning or has a job that is not in compliance with the Constitution. And at the state level, the same thing. And bottom line, the DOJ or the Office of Justice should actually be the ones helping the states realize that they have to literally draw the line in the sand. It is their job. Madison stated this in the Virginia resolutions as well as his report. He literally stated it is the state legislature's job to oppose, stand in, and cease bad government from existing. That they need to make the federal government actually come out and tell the world, hey, everything that has been done, right, wrong, or indifferent, our predecessors have deliberately been violating the Constitution, and all of this that they have done has been fraud. That we, this government, and this government of the people of the United States are not accountable in working with those who have been in the dark recesses of the global, all these other nations, the global agenda and so forth. The debt that they've all been working out and everything has been basically, because people are starting to wake up. They're starting to realize, hey, it looks like America has been subsidizing this whole globalist agenda. We've been subsidizing the whole world to convert into communism. So folks, we have to start waking up. So this is why I'm actually, and I've not talked about this in a long time. I do have a presidential campaign. I've got to work it into my obligatory. So I'm going to be just consolidating that the campaign for the DOJ and for you is to call out people for constitutional compliance. We need to hold every public servant accountable to their oath. And then my presidential campaign is that we need to get people in the state level, in every congressional district. If you all live in a congressional district, if you know people, work together and figure out who you want, out of the group, who should be running for the elector to choose the president. And then you should start communicating with your state secretary of state. And you need to communicate to say, we want to actually put electors on the ballot in accordance with the Constitution, and that the presidential names, the candidates, are not to be on the ballot. This means that it'll go down to the wire. Anybody that wants to be president, it will go down to the wire. And the electors, not the winner of the primary, the electors will choose the vice president and determine who would be the best president and who would be the best vice president. And if they can't do it, then it goes to Congress, and Congress will vote as delegations. So each state gets one vote in the House of Representatives to choose the president, and the Senate will choose the vice president. And all of a sudden, we have just decimated the party control over the presidency. And it will be the beginning of basically shutting down the party control of access to politicians and our politics. In other words, when you really look at what the party does, they make it impossible for anybody to run to be a representative at the county, state, or the federal level. And same thing with president. Oh, you know, you have to come into the Republican Party. They've made laws, unconstitutional laws of the state, that deny you your right to be able to be on the ballot. That is, you know, they talk about your right of suffrage. If you are a U.S. citizen and you have been a citizen for 7 years and 25 years of age, you have a right to have your name on that ballot for an elector or for a representative. It doesn't matter. And I would love to see the day when we're actually pushing this, where it actually goes down to a point where we have 1,000 representatives. You know, the only reason that we actually would have 1,000 is if we maintain the unconstitutional configuration. Why is that, GR? Because the unconstitutional configuration right now in a congressional district, one congressional district represents almost 1 million people. You get that down to the constitutional level of 30,000, which is the legitimate amount of representation. That's never been changed. That is what it is supposed to be today. Therefore, if we keep it at 30,000 and we don't change that constitutionally through an amendment, then that means that there would probably be a lot less, you know, people on the ballot for those congressional districts. So it's the same thing with electors. There's a reason why these men understood what they were doing. They had no idea how it would be so applicable today. They had no idea that we could actually do real-time governing. Real-time governing is where the state legislature actually removes the Senate, or basically just says, you are only proxies there. You're overpaid proxies, and you only live there when we can't communicate. Therefore, they don't need two proxies anymore. They only need one. Because the whole concept of equal suffrage in the Senate, and the reason they had two senators, was for continuity, to make sure that the person understood the issues at hand regarding the treaties and everything else. Well, actually, the people that really need to understand that, and that continuity does exist, and it exists because you have a state legislature that actually should be invoking how they want their senators to vote. And so when we start looking at real-time governing, that means that the state legislature doesn't need to have a person in D.C. when it comes up time to whether they're going to approve or disapprove of a presidential Supreme Court justice, whether they're going to approve or disapprove a treaty being offered by the president. Folks, what we have in this Constitution is, it just amazes me how, as I look at what we have, and I do see some problems. We were talking about just the we've talked in the past, and we'll probably bring it up. I don't think I've brought it up with Tammy before, but we'll talk about how the Supreme Court should actually be representative, that the governor of each state should actually be nominating their justice. This would actually create a federal court where there would actually be, you know, this ability to maintain and manage. We wouldn't need the district courts. You understand what I'm saying? All these, however many, 9, 12, whatever district courts that we have, because now we would have 51 jurists in the Supreme Court, and they would be broken into, you know, the regions of what they would be doing, and then they would also pull together when it came to an appeal over one of those regional courts. In other words, they would all be the same people, and they would be representative, and this would not be a lifetime term. In other words, there's no such thing. If you really think about it, the justices have the sweetest deal, and they're not representative. You want to have a career where you can just basically float on your back for the rest of your life, become a Supreme Court justice. And to do that, you only need to go to an Ivy League school and basically practice law and be really smart at constitution, what they call constitutional law, in bending it and so forth, and you'll find your way into the Supreme Court. Now, there's a lot of competition, just like in the NFL and Major League Baseball, whatever it is. There's always a lot of competition. But look at who goes to the Supreme Court today. It's not representative of America and American academics. It is representative of the Ivy League, and we have been honoring the Ivy League for way too long. They have been subversive. They have been subversive since the 1880s and probably even before that. But the point is that we need to have truly a representative government in every branch. And the reason that we have the Supreme Court is because it was an archaic concept. And these men couldn't fathom, you know, how as the United States would grow, if every state was providing one justice, you would then have enough justices to actually break into the regions. And if there was an appeal from that region and it was a legitimate, and by the way, that these men would actually make sure that the jurisdiction of the federal court, the only things that they should be dealing with are those things that arise under the Constitution or those things that are specified in the Constitution that they have jurisdiction to. The courts have been open for everything under the sun, and that is all unconstitutional. So when you really think about it, there's very few things that the federal court system should really be dealing with. Most of them are strictly state issues. Abortion should have never gotten into the Supreme Court. Anything energy, anything environment, any of these, labor, none of these things should have ever been put into the federal court system. It doesn't arise under the Constitution. This is what Hamilton did to us, folks. I've said this before. Hamilton's been the nefarious one. So I'm actually running out of time, and I haven't even dove into what I really wanted to talk about, but I just wanted to reemphasize that if you're interested in becoming a presidential elector and getting your name on the ballot, which you have a right to do, you need to start communicating with the people in your congressional district, the Patriots or what have you, and you also need to start communicating to that Secretary of State, because we'll be diving back into the Electoral College regarding the ratification base, because it does get clarified that the people are to choose their electors. They talk about it all as a part of representation in Madison's notes, but it gets that concept of the people choosing their electors is galvanized within the ratification debates. And so when we get to that, we'll actually prove that to you, okay? So as we move forward, as we come back, I should say, to move forward, I'll be diving into what we kind of read last Friday and what I didn't get a chance to cover on Monday, so that we can get into the Louisiana Purchase, because that's the next treaty we're diving into, because those people who are against the Constitution are using these things as misinformation. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so as we kind of look at the curriculum, January 2nd, we covered the Tory Acts. And in the Tory Acts, we kind of explain how Continental Congress came together. Because Continental Congress came together because in 1763, as the governments, the state or the colonies were being dismantled, the governments of the colonies, and the king was injecting his own governors into the colonies, that didn't bode well. That did not sit well with the colonists. They did not like this tyranny. And so they all started organizing, and they organized themselves under different fashions, different names. But what they were provincial governments. The provincial governments throughout the colony were basically the county governments. One of the things that we've learned, and we actually, I've never pulled it forward, but Alexander Hamilton was one of such men that actually created a committee of safety for the state of New York. So New York used committees of safety. Many of the other colonies either used assemblies, conventions, councils, it doesn't matter. What these groups were a representative body chosen by the people of that county or the vicinage, the area, and they basically put together a group of people of the entire colony that were chosen to represent the different communities, right? And this was, to them, a representative body, i.e. a jury, to actually look at the facts and determine what to do. It became a no-brainer that the first thing that this body of representatives of that state that were chosen out of the vicinages, that these were representatives of those people of the communities, right? What they did was they petitioned. Every colony followed suit in what they needed to do. They could have functioned like a grand jury and called out the crime and actually could have created an indictment for the king, but they don't have that jurisdiction. In other words, the jurisdiction of your county and a grand jury is that county. The jurisdiction of the county of a state is the state. The jurisdiction of the federal government's grand jury would be the grand jury. Now, you have to understand the grand juries, the way they were originally done and the way we should be doing them, or I should say super juries, because this is more of a representative body that doesn't indict crimes. They do discovery, they go through the facts, and they basically create edicts, declarations to say, this is a violation of the law. This is a violation of our rights and what needs to happen. Therefore, that's why they write petitions. And if you understand what a petition is, that's exactly what a petition is. It identifies that a wrong is being done, how it's wrong, the history, maybe, or all the little details, and then what needs to be done to fix it so that they can restore their rights. And they, you know, lay out expectations or what have you of what has to happen. In other words, when you really look at this petition and then you start examining the Bill of Rights, you will learn that the petition is a form of instructing government what needs to happen. Now, this is why you want to make sure that when you create your grand jury or your super jury, let's call it a super jury, not a grand, because a grand jury is really for indictments of crimes. A super jury is to create edicts and declarations of what the law is and what has to happen. As a matter of fact, just so you understand, under common law, when the law has become so perverted, when government has become so corrupt and perverted, the people have a right to band together to examine the facts themselves and to create these verdicts. These verdicts and this jury or this super jury, this assembly, needs to actually be sanctioned by the local representatives, not by the people, not by the sheriff, because that's the old doctrine under the monarchical theocracy, because in those days they didn't have a representative government. But the concept of creating a representative body to do the discovery and so forth and to drive the petitions is a part of our representative government today equally. And because we do have local representatives, your representatives have the responsibility of forming these assemblies, these committees, whatever you want to call them. We don't care. So bottom line, we're actually connecting the dots of really what legitimately needs to happen under this Constitution. These groups creating these jural assemblies, these are not sanctioned. These are not being formed by the sanction or by the legitimate purpose of your representative body in your county. Now, anybody, any group of kids can get together and say, hey, I don't like what's going on, and we're going to create our own little assembly, and we're going to make our own. And you represent, what, 20 people of the county. How is that legitimate, folks? Oh, well, we did all the due diligence and we wrote off to The Hague. The day you start writing The Hague is the day you have literally crossed the line as a citizen, because now you're dealing with international relations where the Constitution is very clear. That is not to be done by people or even legitimate county governments or legitimate state governments. The Logan Act lays the line out that the Constitution has left all foreign affairs and foreign engagements to the executive and his emissaries. Therefore, even a person from Congress, because the Logan Act was actually named after, I believe it was a Pennsylvania congressman who actually went over to Paris and tried to create a sweet deal with Paris or with France. Folks, I'm just trying to help you understand that what we're doing is oh so legitimate and oh so powerful. Because if you do this, then the people will start really understanding this concept of assembling, the right of assembly and the right of petition. That those two things in the First Amendment that nobody understands. Everybody thinks, oh, the right of assembly is to go out into the streets. No, no, no. And as a matter of fact, when we hit the Virginia ratification debates, I'm hoping that you keep an eye out and watch this, because when we hit the Virginia ratification debates, Madison talks out and basically calls out any type of riotous behavior, any type of protest in the street is unacceptable in a civil society. You have the opportunity to write down your grievances and petition government, and they are legally obligated. The fact is, government, because of the court, has been able to obviate this constitutional requirement, this legitimate legal requirement. That's why the courts are saying, no, 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 you need to go out. Why do the courts want you out in the streets? Because then you become susceptible to tyranny. Tyranny is arbitrary rule. Tyranny is when they let the progressives burn down the city centers and actually take full control of physical property with armed forces and so forth, like in Seattle. That's absolutely unconstitutional, illegal behavior, and so forth. But the court said, oh, no, no, this is, that's your right of protest. No, it's not, folks. Your right of protest is to go and disrupt your representatives in your county center. And you shouldn't have to do this, though. They should be friendly. They should be your representatives, and they should have their arms open. If they're closing their arms to this concept that you cannot, and they basically are shutting you down to say, we will not listen to your petitions, then you have a right to assemble and shut them down. That's when you get a little bit hot and you actually start bringing more and more people in so that they start realizing that they cannot shut down the right of the people to assemble and petition their government. There's a huge difference from you going out into the street and getting thousands of people out of the park and then migrate from the park, you know, around the city to, you know, the companies or the businesses like Wall Street or whatever, things you don't like, and start, you know, burning the buildings and those types of things, because they allow that. They want you to do that because they don't want you to hold them accountable. They don't want you to force them to do the things that they're supposed to be doing. Because what they're doing is not actually restoring liberty, restoring the rule of law. What they're doing is building a stronger and more entrenched and more fortified tyrannical government. Folks, there's a reason why we've all been indoctrinated into these fallacies, these falsehoods. So all this being said, as you go through the Tory Acts, as we've just went through this petition, and as you look at the Article of Association that we went through earlier, just like the Tory Acts, we are proving to you that this is the process. And when we look at, you know, this concept of petitioning, you know, there is nothing more significant regarding our revolution as a union and as we evolve towards the Constitution, then petitioning and actually having engaged and intellectual and civil conversations as to what government should be doing. When we abandoned the monarchical theocracies of Europe, we left them behind. We are never to look back, but we still have these same processes within our republican form of government. That's why it's in the First Amendment. And the fact is, and this actually shows where the blood really lies on the hands of the courts, because the courts have ruled that, oh, this is a right. You have a right to be out there, to be uncivil. And look at how it's panned out. Folks, if you are a law-abiding citizen and you want to go out and protest like January 6th, do pretty much, you know, very little damage done other than the fact that, you know, there's some windows and what we call the break-in. Let me be clear. I've said this for the past 4 years, that the Capitol, the building of the people, our government, cannot lock their doors. Those are our representatives. Now, the president, he's not directly our representative, so access to the president's a little different. Access to the court's a little different because they're not our representatives either. And if you look at it, they're a representative far removed, because the president is chosen by electors and the courts are chosen by, you know, and actually if we get the governors to do this, like I've said before, then we would actually have a real constitutional and a republican form of a court system, a republican form of a president we already have. A republican, well, we're not abiding by it, by the way. That's why I've been running my campaign. But the fact is that our republican form of government, that is where we petition. That's where our cases of grievance go, not to the courts. The courts are actually not designed to be dealing with these things that government shouldn't be doing. Because if they shouldn't be doing it, that means it doesn't arise under the Constitution, which actually means that the court has no jurisdiction over it. Doesn't that make sense? I mean, why is it that people have this hard time connecting those two dots? Environment. This, you know, they're doing things regarding this environment, taking away your rights. This unconstitutional bureaucracy is creating law and so forth. All of that is unconstitutional. So why would you step into a court and say, hey, these guys can't be here? The court is not supposed to address that. your representative government is. They have no authority. Where did we delegate to you or to the federal legislature the ability to create those rules, to create that body, to go open that door and wage tyranny on us? They can only do those things delegated. This is what you get from this show. I know I feel like I'm being a show salesman here because we're covering the content, but I'm just trying to connect the dots and how important it is moving forward. I can't emphasize enough, when you really look at the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, they were the same as petitions. Instead of petitioning the general government, they were petitioning their states to say, hey, look, did we agree for this? This is creating the civil conversation from one governing body, like what happened at the state. Remember the state, there were these provincial governments within each of the colonies, and as they created their little representation, you know, they had maybe four or five in each little county, and as the county started meeting together, they were petitioning each other to kind of adjoin and organize and work together. As this started growing, it took a while. It took them over 10 years to create the Continental Congress. So you see my point? We don't have to wait 10 years. We have history. We have all of the facts. We can do this now. We can take your state back quickly. All you have to do is just put your foot in the right direction and move forward. Move forward into organizing your demand on your county government to create this constitutional review assembly, committee, council. Don't care what you call it, but it will be a constitutional review. And when you look at what these guys have to do, because we've kind of created the bylaws and a mission, and once they've been accepted, we'll publish them. But I'm also working on the whole flow chart so you can understand why all of these things that this committee has to do is critical. Remember, this is like a jury. They're going to do the due diligence. They're going to look at the facts, and they're going to quickly come out with a declaration that for this county, we the people have declared that that annotated constitution is an abomination to the Constitution of the United States, or for the United States of America. The legitimate and original constitution, that only the original language and the ratification debates are the only legitimate documents in reviewing what is constitutional and basing our government, period. Not the Federalist Papers, not international law, and not the interpretations by jurists. Jurists have no constitutional right to start interpreting, because when they have the ability to interpret, they have the ability to actually create their own discretion as to what the law means. They're handstrong. This is one of the reasons why Jay looked at the juries in our constitutional system as, you know, not very illustrious, not very, you know, there's not much I can do. I'm kind of, my hands are tied. I can only do what the law allows me. I can't do great things. That right there is an indictment on this desire to be able to wander because we stand at a fountain or a mantle of power, and that, oh, now we can actually create law. No, the jurists are not to create law. Our system is Republican in form, and only our representatives create law. And if you look at it, the representative body, it's a tag tattered, it's we the people, uneducated or what have you. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is that they support their oath, or they fulfill their oath of office by supporting and defending the Constitution. That means that they hold executives accountable. They hold the executive offices or departments accountable, those legitimate offices. All illegitimate offices are to be shut down. They're to hold the jurist and to regulate the jurists. Regulate the jurists. Go look at the Constitution and look at Article 3. There's a couple places where Congress is to regulate them. our legislators are to regulate the court. And look at today how the courts regulate the law going into legislative body. There's a body of lawyers, and the lawyers are going to tell you, this is not a good law. You can't really pass this. And how many laws come out of those little offices of lawyers to basically violate the Constitution? They're okay with it because it's, you know, what we want to do. And this is, you know, this matches some of our other laws. This is a good law, but it's completely unconstitutional when we start really putting our arms around the problem. We can see who has perpetuated or who has aggrandized and increased the magnitude of their influence outside of their defined roles and responsibilities. And that is the court. That is the executive. I mean, Trump is doing kind of like the oxymoron that the president, in an executive order, creating a law that only the president has the final say over anything that a presidential bureaucracy, the executive bureaucracies do. Well, okay, but let's say the bureaucracy, Environmental Protection Agency, no, let's pick on a different group, the Department of Energy. There's no constitutionality for it. And so if they're going to create a law and they come to you and say, well, this is what we want to do, and he allows it, then he's actually invoking unconstitutional law from an unconstitutional body. How is that good? How about let's just get rid of all unconstitutional government and get into compliance? Get these radicals into compliance. So the next document that we're going to get into is the Louisiana purchase. This is what I talked about and I promised you. And so let me just kind of give you the overview. Now, actually, when I get this posted, it's not posted yet. But when I do post this Word document, and oh, by the way, when you click on a doc, when you click on, or not click on, you put your mouse over on the link. When you put it over the link, if you look in your browser, usually it's on the very bottom line in the very left corner or what have you, it'll tell you what that link is. And so when I go into Brave, because I do not use Chrome, I do not use Google Chrome and or Explore Edge, what have you, the Microsoft crap products. And so when I go to the constitutional or the academic source documents, because I know there's a bunch of documents there that are Word documents, and you will notice that that pops up when you click, when you put the your mouse or the pointer over the link in the very bottom left, it'll actually tell you the path and the document name. It'll basically say reclaimingtherepublic.org, files and documents, ratification debates, Delaware debates, .docx. So it gives you the full path of where that sits on the domain and the document that you're going to download. When you look at something and it is all, you know, garbly gook with percentage signs and so forth, I don't trust links like that. And as a matter of fact, what's interesting is because my website isn't HTTPS where I can start masking and doing all that type of stuff, then that's how we get, that's how they get you into clicking on a link where they can run scripts and actually perform crap on your computer and compromise you. When you actually look at what we're providing you, we're far more secure because we're more transparent. Now, there's a lot of good sites out on HTTPS that actually are transparent, but the fact of the matter is that the HTTPS and what you would be considering secure is still nefarious because that's how you go to these newer websites that are HTTPS and you can get malware installed on your computer. Well, hold on. I thought HTTPS was supposed to be more secure. No. It's just a way of creating less and less transparency for you, the user, and for them to be able to have their own secure code and become a part of what Google wants is this control over the internet. Remember, HTTP was just a standard protocol that was established decades ago when the internet was established. Then when Google decided to actually put their flag on the moon or put their flag on the top of the mountain because they felt that they had that much level of control. They told the entire internet, you need to go to this HTTPS. We need to start using these things. Some things on security, I'm all for. But when Google creates these certificates that you have to register for, why? I mean, I can understand if you're really if you're concerned about secure commerce, then HTTPS is fine. But HTTP is equally fine if you're not doing commerce. You're just basically putting data out there. There's nothing unsecure about my website. And so, you know, these are the frustrations I constantly deal with. But anyway, so you need to download this. And with the way to do that would be right-click. When you get the cursor over the link, right-click. And there's instructions on the academic source documents how to download and save it to your computer. Then you can open up the Word document. Now, in every single one of my Word documents and even in the PDFs, I will actually put the source. If it's a PDF and it's a copy of, let's say, some document or what have you, in the very bottom or the footer of the page is where I put the source information. And in this particular case, the Louisiana Purchase, you can get all of this information from https://www.archives.gov, milestone documents, Louisiana Purchase, and then a bunch of gobbledygook. And that gobbledygook is just because of the way they have, and it's problematic. I mean, they've got away from standards. This is why you see this stuff is because there's actually spaces in between the names or the words. I don't do that. That's why I basically put all my words together and capitalize the beginning of each word. This is important. I'm trying to help you understand that when you're looking at something, it's a lot easier when you do it very, very specific conventions or processes. But let me dive into this. I'm going to give you the overview so that on Monday, I'll be able to dive straight into this because I think I've dragged the dead horse through the mud far enough for you to understand why what we're doing is critical, and these documents help refute this misinformation that you will be getting regarding the Constitution. Oh, the Constitution's illegitimate. Says who? Says the person that wants to mislead you and sell you something. Sell you on a convention of states. Sell you on nullification. Sell you on something that will not preserve our Constitution and restore our government. The only way to restore our government is interposition. It's taking action. That's the only way we can get back there. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through the introduction that's on that page to kind of set the stage for you as to the Louisiana Purchase. Then we will get into the actual treaty between the United States of America and the French Republic. And then we'll actually cover a convention between the United States of America and the findings or the outcome of that actual convention, which kind of created the treaty, or one begot the other, if that makes sense. So we'll dive into all of that. So we're out of time. Don't forget, we need to all get out and help start helping people understand the importance of compliance of the Constitution. That's what our campaigns have to be about. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract. And with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.